Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of our Tickets for Two podcast, where we finally kick off season two.
And season two, baby!
And we begin with a new segment we call Take Two. Say that 10 times fast. This is where we start diving into some beloved and otherwise hated movies. We give them a second try, and we see if it holds up to today's standards. So today we are talking about Get Out, Jordan Peele's directorial debut.
That's right, Andrew. We are doing Get Out. We decided to do this movie as our first movie for Take Two, mostly because Nope is coming out this weekend, and we will be reviewing that. Get Out, Andrew, came out in 2017. It was, as you mentioned, it was Jordan Peele's directorial debut. It was nominated for 4 Academy Awards, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor. It won Best Original Screenplay. Jordan Peele was the first black person to ever win that award. I mean, there was a lot of hype with this movie when it came out. People were talking about it everywhere. Andrew, budget $4.5 million. It made $255 million. Absolutely crazy. 50 times its original budget. I remember when I first saw this movie, I went with a couple of friends, and it was one of the best theater experiences I've ever had. People were just howling with laughter and, you know, literally like yelling, "Get out," and things like that. And people just didn't know what was going to come next. It was so twisty and turny. And funny enough, I really did only watch it once. So rewatching it for this podcast, I was really excited to dive back into it. Andrew, did you catch this in theaters or after the hype had worn out?
It's funny because I never fell for the hype. I know this movie had a lot of buzz at that time, but I just didn't care. I was like, it's whatever. It's one of those movies that people are going to just be talking about, and I never even tried to watch it in theaters. So I know it came out, like, what, you said 2017? I didn't see it until 2018 when I was, like, in my final year of college. So that kind of tells you all how old I am. And my buddies and I, we would just watch Get Out in our study sessions, like, every night while we pretend to study. So for, like, nearly a whole semester straight, I'd be watching that movie with a bunch of guys. So wow. It took me a year.
That was the first time you saw it?
Took me a year to get around to it, but yeah.
So what was your reaction the first time you saw it? Because I loved it. I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, wow, that was unique. It was hilarious. The theater had a great time.
Yeah, it was funny because when we were watching it, we got a bootleg version of it with Korean subtitles. It was an interesting experience to catch it. But it was great. After I finished watching it, I realized, like, okay, now I understand all the hype around it. Now I get why it was so much buzz, all these Oscar nominations. It was definitely worth watching. I loved it. It was a good time. I remember baby me back then. I had a good time.
Yeah, you talk about the Korean subtitles. I gotta go on another mini rant. So I swear this movie, for the longest time, whenever I go on HBO Max and I'm looking for something to watch, it's been there as an option, like, every single time. So I'm like, all right, we're gonna rewatch this. Let me see where it is. It's not on anything. It's not on Amazon. It's not on Hulu. It's not on Netflix. It's not on HBO. It's not on Stars. It's not on anything. You gotta pay for it. It's only $5, but at the same time, it's just blowing my mind. I just don't get it, Andrew. It's like, this happens every single time. There's so many movies to stream, but anytime one's like, oh, I want to watch this movie, it's never available. It's never available. So I'm just going to say I streamed it. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to get into details.
Yeah, we don't condone pirating. I remember all of you seeing that commercial way back in the day of, like, you wouldn't download a car, and, like, piracy is bad. But you got to do what you got to do. We weren't going to pay $5 for this. But it's funny because, like, all these movies have contracts. Like, was it Top Gun? It was on Netflix, and they took it off at the end of May. So if you didn't get already, a chance to see the original Top Gun on Netflix, you gotta probably pay for that now too.
Should be on Paramount, I think they distributed. But yeah, in general, it's I kind of get it. Listen, if you pirate everything, probably not the best thing to do. But if you're already paying for 5 or 6 streaming services, like most of us are, and you're looking for a really specific movie and you can't find it, it hurts. It's just kind of like, why would I want to go pay another, like, you know, $7-$8 just to stream this when I could just find a, you know, I already watched it in theaters, already did my dues back in the day, and I just want to check it out.
The economy is hurting right now. We're not going to dish out $5 for a movie like that. There's so many free. So do what you got to do, guys. But at the same time, understand that these creators, these filmmakers, they all got paid already. So your $5 bootleg is not going to hurt their pockets.
Andrew, one of the reasons I was so excited to rewatch Get Out is because it's such a twisty movie. You know, the excitement of watching it the first time is that you don't know what's going to happen. And then the excitement of watching the second time is you kind of look for hints. But do you think this is a movie that when you rewatch it enough times, I know you were saying it, you saw it a whole bunch of times with all your college classmates. Do you think it ages well when you know the twist, you know what's coming? Does it still have that same hype and fun factor?
When I was rewatching it again, yeah, it definitely was. I mean, granted, it's been forever, so it kind of does feel like I'm watching it again for the first time. Yeah, it was crazy. Like I forgot the whole hypnotism part of the movie. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
For some reason, I totally forgot the beginning of the film, so it all connected when he found the guy with I forget the actor's name. He's a really good actor.
Like Daniel Kaluuya?
No. Is this L? God, is this an L?
Oh, yes. That guy from Atlanta.
And he's Atlanta. He's also an Uncut Gems.
Lakeith Stanfield.
There he goes. Yeah, like he's an amazing actor. I totally forgot the beginning of, like, that's how he got captured and taken, and they find him again. So I always wondered, yeah, like,
I forgot about that sort of like prequel scene.
Yeah, so when that happened, it was kind of cool getting a refresher about all these things. And yeah, definitely holds up to today's time, dude. I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing you bring up. There's so much foreshadowing in this film. This is only the second time I ever watched it. And it's insane. It's like once he gets to that house, every other line that's like said by the dad or the mom, it's like, oh shit. Like when they're talking about the whole Jesse Owens thing, about him, grandpa never got over it. And like, you know, we couldn't bear to let them go. It's like all of these lines, it's just crazy. It's like, wow, you don't realize it. And the reason it's so masterfully done is I think very few people, the first time they saw this, knew exactly what was up. You knew obviously, you know something was up, but you didn't know exactly what it was. The fact that they were, you know, going into, you know, their brains and dissecting them and, you know, swapping their bodies out. You didn't think it was going to be that crazy. And that's something I thought was absolutely insane.
I remember watching it for the first couple times, and even now today, like when they were like talking about Tiger Woods, and when the dad was like, I would have voted for Obama for a third term. Like, when they were heavily emphasizing all these black kind of things or celebrities or anything like that, I was starting to wonder, like, okay, something's going on. And like when I rewatched it this weekend, it made sense. Like, okay, now I get it. And then there was one subtle line that the dad made when he was giving Chris a tour of the house. He was walking him. He's like, oh, there's black mold down there. And I was like, why?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he said that as he's giving him a tour. So I was like, is that meaning like he's having like black people under his house? Or like why does he call it, you know, that?
The first time you saw it.
Yeah. So I was wondering a lot about why he was naming all these things. And I don't know, like all the subtle symbolism and everything that Jordan Peele throws into this movie, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's crazy because it's his first movie. You think about that. Usually it takes a lot of directors, and he wrote it too. It takes them a lot of time to kind of get into things, and, you know, they have some bad movies at first, but just right off the bat, he blew everyone away. That's why I mentioned the whole budget versus box office is insane. I mean, everyone was talking about this to go see. I know you mentioned that you didn't go see it when it first came out, but you heard about all the hype and all that. I want to say one thing, though. I remember the trailer. I'm sure you saw the trailer before it came out. It was still great having seen the trailer, but this is one of those movies where it's like, wow, imagine seeing it without having seen the trailer. You genuinely have no idea what's going on. Because the trailer does show a lot of those scenes. I think it shows a little bit of the hypnosis. It shows the grandpa running at him at like, you know, 12 a.m. and all that. So it's definitely one of those movies that you need to go into it as blind as possible.
And that's what makes me worried about his new film coming out, Nope, because I remember with Get Out, there was very little marketing that was pushed, if I remember correctly. But with Nope, we're seeing all these like different number of trailers, all these TV spots. And that's what's worrying me about movies. Like whenever movies start doing that, whenever they start pushing a ton of marketing, That to me is a sign that they're afraid of how this movie's gonna do. I remember when Doctor Strange was first coming out, and they were just pushing TV spot after TV spot and trailer after trailer, and that was like, I think they're afraid of what's happening, so they're trying to get more people to remember to come back. So with all this Nope talk coming around, I'm kind of worried about what's gonna happen.
Well, Andrew, it's funny that you bring that up. I do have some news on Nope. Now, I don't have reviews, but here's what I've heard. Let me try to sum up everything that I've read about the movie. I've avoided the trailers because after I saw the first one, I'm like, okay, I want to watch this. This looks great. It's Jordan Peele. But at the same time, I don't want to get too spoiled on it. Okay, so from what I've heard from screenings, that test screenings were mixed. They were, you know, some people said it was good. Some people said it wasn't good. Some people said it was the worst movie. I've also heard that unlike Get Out and Us, it doesn't really have the same sort of social or racial commentary. It's just a movie. It's just a blockbuster. The review embargo drops Wednesday, I think sometime in the evening. So that's literally a day before the movie comes out. Yeah. And then I think the social media embargo drops either tonight, recording this on a Monday, July 18th, but or July 19th, Tuesday. So that's kind of late when they're dropping the reactions and the review. So I definitely hear your concerns. It looks like this might be a bit more of a mixed movie from Jordan Peele, which would be a surprise given how consistent. I mean, he's only done two, but you know, both Us and Get Out were really highly rated. I haven't seen Us though. I'm ashamed to say that. I don't know. Did you ever check that one out?
Oh yeah, I remember. Oh god, I remember seeing Us. That was funny enough. Back in 2018, I think that movie came out. Was it 2018?
2018? Us was 2019.
2019. Makes sense. You never saw Us?
I don't know why. It came out and it got really good reviews. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see this. I heard it was a little horror-y. And then some of my friends were a little more mixed on it. They're like, yeah, it's not as good as the reviews. And you know what I mean? So, you know, 1 week turns into 2 weeks, turns into 3 weeks. And then you just kind of forget about it. You just kind of forget about the movie. You end up never checking it out. But yeah, I'm sure it's worth watching.
100% worth watching. I think it was not as great as Get Out, but definitely like a strong tie for first place, which is only what, a second movie.
Yeah.
But
yay, second place out of
I don't know. Two. I feel like Nope is gonna be like his first 60% kind of RT score movie.
Is he going that M. Night Shyamalan route, where he's just like a one hit wonder?
Man, I think so. I mean, he's kind of declining. I think.
We'll see. I mean, well, you can't say he's declining. It hasn't even come out yet. We gotta wait.
Well, I don't know, dude. Once you start introducing like aliens and stuff into like your movie, I think you start disconnecting from like reality, or like the ground of where like all his fan base was. You know, his whole life. You know, all his movies are grounded. You know, some little sci-fi aspect to it, of course. But when you start introducing like extraterrestrials, like, dude, come on, are you digging that deep into your hat that you can't come up with anything else anymore?
Listen, I love aliens. I'm all about ancient aliens and all that stuff. I'm a sucker for alien movies, and I'm really curious to see what he does with this one, because you know, most alien movies are the same. Aliens come, you know, they fight, the war, it ends. So, and in this one, we don't really get a good look at the aliens in any of the trailers. So, you know, for those who don't know, NOPE stands for Not of Planet Earth. I think Jordan Peele confirmed that in an interview. Wasn't meant to be a spoiler, but I don't know. We got to give it a shot. We got to wait at the very least for the reviews, and then when we see it this weekend. I have my hopes up. I hope it'll be good, because I really like alien movies.
I'm just glad that everyone knows Jordan Peele for Get Out. Like, that's a good movie to be known by. Well, what I'm wondering about is, like, why doesn't Jordan ever use Keegan Michael Key and like his movies? Like, those guys are buddies, like, for, you know, the whole time they did Key and Peele. Like, why wouldn't he give him like at least a cameo? I wonder.
I think he does have a cameo in the movie. He's one of the NCAA players that the girlfriend is looking at the end.
No way, that's him.
Well, yeah, I don't know if he was the one that she brings up, but he is one of them. So he does make a small cameo, but I get what you mean.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, but he they should give him at least a bigger role. Come on, that's your best friend.
Maybe he doesn't want to. Maybe not Jordan, but maybe like Keegan is just kind of like,
oh, come on.
No, you know what, Jordan, no pressure.
Have you seen what Keegan's been doing? Like flop after flop, commercial after commercial.
I don't
like,
know what he's doing. I have no idea what he's doing.
Exactly. He's doing floppy movies and like...
Oh, is he making movies?
Cheesy comedies that just get like review bombed. And he makes like what, two commercials a year? So like, I think he would want to be in a Jordan Peele movie.
Maybe he's doing the Tyler Perry thing and just making movies and getting a lot of money for it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, good on him. Good on him.
It could be. Andrew, one thing about this film that I found so interesting is it's only an hour and a, like 38 minutes or so. It's like 104 minutes runtime. Mm-hmm. It's pretty short. And then you're like an hour and 9 minutes in until he gets caught or you know, transported to the basement. It's just kind of crazy because it takes, I think, 45 minutes just for the hypnosis scene to happen. There's a lot of buildup in this. And then when things finally start to click, it goes super fast. And I think that's what's so impressive about it is that, you know, Jordan Peele doesn't show too much early in this movie where it loses, you know, all its tension immediately. He really kind of hooks the audience, you know, gets them on the fishing reel and, you know, pulls them in. And that to me was, you know, what made it really stand out. I want to talk about a little bit about some of our favorite scenes, or at the very least some of the best ones. I think right off the bat, you got to go for the one where he goes for the smoke, you know, the grandma's creepy upstairs, or the maid, you know, the worker guy, like, who's the grandpa, he's just like sprinting right at him. So like that part's really intense. And then he goes back in, he's, you know, sitting with the mom, like, oh, you know, doing the whole tea thing. And then boom, like, just, what does she say? Like, drown or whatever.
Oh, sink.
Like, go sink. Yeah, yeah. Like, that's the first part of the movie. We're like, holy shit, like, what the hell is going on here?
My favorite parts of the movies were definitely when he was first trapped in the chair, and like the thing that, what, the brother, yeah, comes and gets him, and then like he has the cotton in his ear, like, oh, smart man, put the cotton in his, yeah, ear. But it was funny how the thing that caught my attention was that blind guy of Hudson Gallery,
Steven Root.
Yeah, Barry, man.
Barry, yes, sir.
Gotta love him. So when I first heard his voice, like, no way, that's him. And I immediately, yeah, went to his IMDb. I was like, yep, there he is. But that was pretty cool. Finally, you know, seeing him and other things I didn't even know about. But it was just really cool seeing like how Jordan Peele was able to. The script was incredible. The way he made everyone talk to him, like to Chris. How saying like, oh, black is in the new fashion, like, whoa, interesting. And then like ask, and then like when the other old guy was asking him, like, show me your swing, because he wanted to see, you know, like, is he good enough to be, you know, a, yeah, golf
makes
player?
No, makes no fucking sense the first time you're watching.
Yeah, like,
why?
And then everything was cool about it. I really liked it. I think,
yeah,
I didn't have one moment in the film where I did not like a scene. I think it was all pretty good.
Yeah, the Writers Guild of America ranked the screenplay as the greatest of the 21st century, and you know, obviously it won the best original screenplay at the 90th Academy Award. So it was really unique. I remember, in one of the most interesting things is that it's not necessarily like out loud racism in the film. It's a very passive racism that's displayed towards Chris's character in the movie, you know, like mentioning the whole like, oh, you must be really strong, or you know, you must be, you know, fast or good at sports, and you know, I would have voted for Obama a third time. It's that sort of passive racism that Jordan Peele really wanted to, I think, highlight, because you know, people who are racist are, you know, are racist. It's pretty upfront, but to demonstrate the sort of like the subtle racism that goes on towards black people in this film, I think it really made a lot of people realize, like, oh, like maybe I shouldn't say certain things to black people. I thought I was complimenting them, you know what I mean? Like it's something that wasn't even like 5 years ago. I don't think it was really talked about that much, at least in entertainment circles, from like a movie or TV perspective.
Jordan Peele, I mean, he made that an obvious thing that he was definitely gonna attack the racism that's embedded in our country to begin with already.
In the culture, like, kind of
exactly. But one thing that was like very subtle is the way he introduces it into the movie. Like, I remember like towards the end of the film when Rose is drinking milk out of the glass, is mm-hmm. like she's using a black straw to drink through it. And I don't know, I feel like very little things, small things like that, is Jordan's way of saying, like, I don't know, I guess in some ways.
Well Andrew, I actually saw the Fruit Loop scene as a little bit different.
Okay.
And I think I read about this too, is that
the colors from the whites.
Yeah, I think so. I think I read about it as well. That's the first thing I noticed when I saw it. And then I also read about it that it was intentional, that, you know, the Fruit Loops are colored. She's keeping her, you know, white milk separate. Is she separating colored people? Like, is people trying to say, like, that she's racist, so she's keeping, you know, white and colored separated? That's the way I interpreted that scene.
It's funny enough, because, like, she did that, separating white and black, but the whole point of their whole procedure is to mix white and black. A white consciousness into a black body. Like,
that's literally the whole point. Well, it's mixing in her body, if you think about it.
Oh, there, yeah, that's, hey, look at that.
Hey, we figured it out.
Hey, hey-o. That's so cool.
Write that thesis. Get that PhD, boy.
But oh yeah, that's crazy to think about like that. Yeah, well, what's really interesting is how, like, the wardrobe that's used in the movie as well, like all the guests and all the people, they're wearing red as a, like, their way of being part of their secret society, which is pretty interesting. Yeah it was a pretty cool little subtle thing to catch. But
yeah, I think I was reading an interview somewhere that Pio really, you know, went for, like, manipulating colors in a way. And I noticed, like, some of the early scenes, it just looks like it's filmed quite normally. There's, like, a normal color and all that. And then as he's going into the sunken place and, you know, other place like that, the whole, how do you say it? Like, the hue of the film just, like, is rid of all the color. You know, it's super, you know, dark, more horror-y, and has, you know, it's a horror, but it's also kind of a comedy. So seeing the way it would bounce back between scenes like that, I thought was well done. Andrew, if there was anything you would change about this movie, what would it be?
Probably the runtime, man. Like, I honestly feel like I could have watched more of this. I don't know what exactly I could have been watching more of, but I feel like I would have kept watching a lot. Maybe, like, if there was an extra scene where he's, like, freeing other black people that are being waited to operate on, you know, maybe some kind of, I don't know, liberation. Yeah, something like that. So I feel like I could have watched a lot more. This movie was definitely incredible.
Yeah, well, supposedly they approached Pio about a sequel, and he said, you know, he's thinking about it. Like, he's thought about it. He might. I think if Nope busts, and then he does another movie and it also busts, we'll probably, maybe even after Nope, we'll get, like, a Get Out too. We'll get a sequel.
He needs to revive his reputation.
Yeah, if Nope is bad. But my question is, like, where do you really go with a film like this? In terms of a sequel, you know, like, would it be, like, what would the twist be? Where would that narrative pull be? Would it be just a completely different film from a tonal perspective, where he's trying to go and, you know, like you said, save other people who are captured? I mean, I would trust, you know, his creative genius to come up with something, but I fail to, like, think of anything off the top of my head.
Maybe he does dismantle whatever secret, you know, society that they have going on. Maybe he does go after that. That's true. Yeah, what would you do with that? Some movies don't deserve a sequel. This one does not. I know, like, Forrest Gump.
Not deserve. Doesn't need, right?
It doesn't need one. Like, like, Forrest Gump was going to have a sequel, but Tom Hanks turned that down. Elf was going to have a sequel, but Will Ferrell turned it down. Like, there's a lot of movies that you know, there's buzz about having another one done about it, but it just doesn't need it. Like, it's fine. Just let it be. It's all these studios that just want more money. Like, oh, they'll eat it up. They'll go to the box office. It'll make money. Like, come on, guys. Just let it rest.
Yeah, it's far more miss than hit when it comes to sequels on movies that are already perfect. Like the original Blade Runner is one of the few hits. I would say Blade Runner 2049, I think, enhances it. I think it was a great film. Not to get too off topic, in terms of what I would change on this film, Andrew, is, so it's already really short, and we have a lot of scenes with what's his friend's name, Rod Williams, the TSA guy.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. He's so great. He's so funny. He breaks up a lot of the tension. At the same time, don't you think Get Out would have been 10 times more intense and scary if it didn't have these jumps between where he's at and going back to his friend and the TSA? Because when it does that, it starts to feel like a normal movie. But if all the focus was on Chris's character, then it would be scary. You would feel claustrophobic. You would feel trapped, because there's the scene where the family, you know, it's revealed that even the girlfriend was against him, which actually caught me off the guard the first time. But when the family basically, you know, knocks him out, drags him down under, it jumps right back to his friend Rod. And I feel like in order to keep that kind of tension and scariness, it would have been better if it just focused on Chris the whole time, because you really feel stuck. But then, you know, I don't know about you, but like when you go back to the Rod, it's like, ah, oh, like, you know, you kind of feel good. You get some comedy and there's, okay, I feel like he's going to be safe. You know, I feel safe just watching him in his scene. Do you think it would have been better if they just focused it on him being stuck in there, went pure horror?
No, I feel like we needed the break from the tension. I feel like that really does help you get back to being able to breathe. And then then you get, you know, for lack of a better word, sunk right back into the action with Chris.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. So I definitely think Rod's character definitely did help the comedic relief to relieve us of, you know, what we're feeling. And then that's way, you know, we get back into the twists, into the shock. And we're not always, you know, on the lookout expecting the next big, you know, twist that's going to happen in the movie. So I think it's necessary.
Yeah, I think so too. At the same time, I mean, I love those comedy moments, and it does give you a breather. I just think it could have been, like, you know, really crazy if they just stuck it all to one location. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Rod, we want to talk about who's the MVP of the movie. Who's the most valuable player? Who brings their A game here? I gotta say, I mean, obviously we can talk about people behind the scenes, acting, directing. You know, Jordan Peele probably is the MVP in terms of just putting this masterpiece, considered by some people, together. But it's got to be Rod, right? In terms of the movie, I mean, this guy, he does it all. He called it from day one. What do you say? Sex slave, motherfucker. Apparently, a bunch of his lines were, what do you call it? When ad hoc, or he made them up himself on the
improv.
Go?
Improv. Improv.
Yeah, he improvised a bunch of his lines. And I got to say, he's my MVP. Andrew, do you have a different MVP?
That cell phone, man. Chris's cell phone. We're taking that little picture that just, with a flash that awoke in Lakeith Steinfeld's memory back. If it wasn't for that cell phone, man, none of that would have happened. That cell phone started it all. Good. But definitely Rod. If you're talking about a person, yeah, Rod.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta say, Andrew, I gotta go on a quick kind of rant and like kind of crap on the movie for a second. If you really think about it, you know, if they really wanted to keep this place secret, away from everyone, wouldn't they have done something to where, like, I don't know, the cell phone signal doesn't work? I mean, or cut his communication with his friend. I mean, they saw him take a picture of Lakeith Stanfield's character. What did they go into his phone and delete it? Because without all that information, his friend Rod would have never found him. So I think it's one of those movies, like, obviously, I get it. It's supposed to be, you know, what do you call it, metaphor or whatever. If you really start to think about those details, these people, this society, like, they I'm surprised they didn't get caught sooner, because it's like, this guy has open communication with the outside world. This is insane.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, why were they waiting so long to begin the operation? Like, I get
to knock
it,
him out.
Yeah, yeah, I get the whole, like, bidding
it's
thing.
It's dumb
and
if
then,
you think about it too much.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I don't know why they didn't cut the communication. They could have just thrown his phone away, just operated him there.
Yeah, well, it was Steven Root's character when they were showing him, like, here's what's actually going to happen to you and all that. It was saying that if the patient has an understanding of what's going to happen, then, you know, the procedure is more successful. So I kind of understood it for that scene. But if you think about the whole, I guess they were trying to take him around and, you know, get to know, have the townspeople get to know him naturally so that, you know, he's being authentic. So they know, like, what exactly they want to auction on him for, instead of it just being like, here he is, and then, you know, he doesn't say anything, or he, I don't know, kills himself or runs away. But yeah, I guess you know, it's a bit nitpicky, but if you think about it, it's like, yeah, that's some shit security. You gotta do away with the phones.
So many plot holes.
If you think about it too hard. Have you seen the alternate ending to this film?
I did see the alternate ending, but what do you want to say about it?
Well, that was the original ending, and the reason they changed it, and for those who haven't seen the alternate ending, I'm sure it's on YouTube, but essentially, correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew, at the end, Chris's character, it's not his friend Rod, it's an actual cop who arrests him instead. Is that all that happens?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right, you're spot on.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Yeah, so that's the alternate ending, but the reason Peele changed it, he had that ending originally because he wanted to also do some commentary on
police,
you know, police, yeah, and getting, you know, black people getting arrested. But after test screenings, he kind of felt like it would be a little unfair to the audience if he got caught that way, because you kind of, you know, you're cheering for him that whole time. I mean, it would have hurt my soul if he got caught at the end and wasn't able to bring it home. But do you think it would have been better with the original or alternate ending?
Oh God, no! Like what we have given already is like so perfect, because then if it was the alternate, or you know, quote unquote original, and then he gets arrested by an actual cop, then the family wins, and that's not what we're here for. And Jordan's right, you know. It's true. He would have, and that's what I love the most about it. At the end of this movie, is that she was calling out to the police because she knew, as a white woman, she was gonna get help, or the cop would have, you know, just lit him up right there in the street. So the ending that we got in the final movie is so perfect, because it shows in her face that she lost. Yep. So yep. I love
you know what
that.
The issue with her character is?
What?
Above everything evil that she does in this movie, she's using Bing at the end.
Using what?
She's using Bing, the Microsoft search engine.
Oh my God, I didn't see that.
She's searching up her next victim. It's like, well, there's a lot of product placement. If you notice, Chris is playing with like a Microsoft tablet in the first scene.
Lot of Surface, yeah.
Surface tablet, and then she's like searching people on Bing. I'm like, this is the most unrealistic movie I've ever fucking seen. Do you think the TSA stuff has aged well? Was this propaganda? Was this a propaganda film by the TSA?
Propaganda? I don't think that's even a thing, man. Those two words don't go together.
I don't know. I just feel like this movie, it's almost like Jordan Peele had a special connection to TSA. Maybe like one of his family members is a TSA, as a TSA officer, because there was a lot of praise given to the TSA in this film.
That's true. I don't know. Maybe he just picked like, who's like the most least respected police force? I'm pretty sure he thought of like a mall cop at first, and he's like, "Oh, TSA."
Doesn't really work.
Yeah.
No, I totally get that. Yeah, some of the TSA stuff, I just wonder. It's like, it was really funny the first time, like, you know, the second or third time, it's kind of like, doesn't really get you the, because it's kind of like, how'd you find me? He's like, I'm the TSA. I'm like, well, but really, like, how'd you actually find him at the end? what did you actually do to get there? Yeah. Andrew, it's time for our scores. But before we do that, we want to talk about the scores that this movie got on Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic. This movie got a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. That is a fantastic score. And it got an 85 on Metacritic. Andrew, do you think the critics got the scores right?
I'm not sure why Metacritic is so low, because I think they got it right.
85 is pretty high for Metacritic.
I think they're spot on, especially with Rotten Tomatoes. Like, this movie is one of those that you just cannot help but think that it's perfection. I can't think of anything that didn't make sense. I can't think of anything that was different. The soundtrack was incredible, so eerie, so creepy. It made you feel like you were, you know, there in the woods, all scared by yourself. It's just incredible, like the originality. So yeah, I think they definitely got it right.
Yeah, I think so too. The Rotten Tomato, like, you know, meter, 98% of critics like this film. It makes sense to me. I mean you might not love it, but I have a hard time, you know, imagining someone seeing this film and disliking it. But for that, we have our new segment we might do once in a while, called Shitty Fan Reviews, Andrew, and I'm gonna read a few to you, and we'll talk about their rating. We got Rotten Tomatoes. Fred gave it 2.5 out of 5 stars.
Oh, why?
Said, it's a weird, freaky, and part comedy. This movie was very disjointed, but also still entertaining. There was a clear anti-white sentiment to it I did not like. Okay, but not great. 2.5 stars.
I bet you, I mean, Fred's white.
I just think he missed the point of the movie.
Of course, so he's white.
I think he missed the point of the movie. RB gave this movie 0.5 star out of 5. Said, this is an overhyped, mediocre movie. If it weren't for the minority cast, it would be forgotten already. Wow. And I got one more for you. From Ali Reza, says, 0.5 star. I'm really shocked how this movie is considered a good movie, even by critics. This movie does not even entertain you. It doesn't have form, doesn't have content, and even cannot make symbolic fear.
They're all just self-reporting at this point.
Also, some moments the film wants to say that racism is bad, !! But also could not say this in a pitiful way. Completely empty movie. Of course, I should not have criticized because this is not a film to be criticized. It is a pre-criticized, quote, film, end quote. That's the last review I'm going to read.
God, yeah. They're...
I mean...
Go ahead.
Most I was going to say, most fans are positive. It does have an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes from the audience score. So most people really like this.
Yeah, no. I feel like when it comes to these bad reviews, it's either... They, I mean, I don't know if you didn't see Euphoria, but there's a funny there's a funny meme that came out of Euphoria when Maddie is like watching Cassie's sister's play. Everyone who's watched Euphoria will know this, and like the play is all about their lives in high school. And Maddie says this funny line that everyone just jokes about now. It's like, is this fucking play about us? And like that's all I could think about with all these reviewers that are talking shit. It's like, is this movie about me? Is this movie talking about my life? Like, yeah, it kind of is. So if the shoe fits, be mad about it, because it's a commentary about your life.
It's very like. It's astonishing. I mean, you could even like put this outside of film media, but how many people are just not self-aware? It's like
they want to be blind to the reality.
It was like watching this and be like, well, this movie is like, you know, it wouldn't be like, you know, like it's like, it's, I don't know how to explain it. It's like you're criticizing the movie for its commentary on racism. It's like you missed the point of the movie. That is the point of the movie. It's just funny. should I watch Euphoria or what?
Is it good? Okay. So man. I could do a whole review on Euphoria because I saw it all the way through. Euphoria is gorgeous. It's made really, really well. The cinematography is incredible. The soundtrack is amazing. So if you can watch Euphoria, I say tread lightly because you're going to see a lot of dicks. You're going to see a lot of unnecessary drama. You're going to see a lot of, I don't know, nonsense. But it is gorgeous. And I don't know why this is set in high school, because there's so many drugs and alcohol and unnecessary sex scenes. So if you can get past all that and you love the, you know, everything else, you'll have a good time with Euphoria. That's my little rant for the episode.
Is Euphoria an HBO show designed for Gen Z, like TikTok millennial kid? I feel like it is. It's kind of, it has that HBO craft to it.
Wow, you then, couldn't sound more like a boomer than just saying all has, those words, you know, together.
You say it's all beautiful and it has all this and it's, you know, it's well directed and acted, but it's like, it just feels like, yeah, you have that HBO beast of a production company behind you, but it's like, I think I've never seen the show, but I see so much stuff online on social media like about it. I don't know, Tumblr and all that. It's like you just feel like
you're on Tumblr. Show,
I'm not on Tumblr, but I just know things, Andrew. I just know where things are. I have a lot of burner accounts. but isn't it one of those shows that maybe it's just like generated? I mean, I haven't judged this. I can't judge it.
No, HBO in general is a huge streaming service targeted towards millennials. They got Euphoria.
Well, HBO is usually adults.
Yeah, HBO has Euphoria. HBO rebooted the Sex and the City to pander to the younger generation.
They're trying now. Yeah.
They redid Gossip Girl to try to pander to them as well. Like, HBO is trying their absolute best to target all these young kids. So, yeah, they're definitely rebranding, and we can notice it.
Yeah, I heard you're a big fan of Sydney Sweeney.
I'm not. Why would you say that?
I don't know. I listen to Bill Simmons a lot, and it's just super. It's just kind of weird because he's like in his 50s. He's got kids, and he's married. He's like crushing on her like throughout every podcast. It's like not even related. It'll be like a basketball podcast, and he'll just bring her up. And I'm like, what's up with everyone's obsession with this person?
I don't even find her attractive. It's just that HBO just made her sign the contract of, like, you know, show your titties as much as possible throughout this whole show. And that's why Sony signed her up for Madam Web, because they know that she would attract all the Euphoria kids.
Is Madam Web, what is that, live action?
Yeah, it's a Sony thing. It's going to be with Dakota Johnson.
She's going to be Spider-Man.
No.
Or Spider-Woman.
No one knows, but... Dakota Johnson's Madam Web. We got Sydney Sweeney's in it. We got a bunch of people that signed on it. What was it? Who's the actor that's in Succession on Apple TV? Who's that guy?
Well, first of all, Succession's on HBO Max.
No, not Succession.
Severance.
Severance. Yeah, who's that guy?
I don't know who I know who he is. I forget. He's yeah. the guy from isn't he the douchey brother from Step Brothers?
I do not know, but I know he signed on to Madam Web now too. So I don't know. So much stuff is happening, but let's wrap up. Let's wrap up this podcast and give it our score.
Oh yeah, Andrew. Boy, I had a tough time with this score. You go first. I'm still thinking what Man, I want to give it.
Dude, I think I know what you're thinking because I'm trying to tread lightly on that line. Like, do we say what we want to say and do we make
Well, I'm not. I know you are. I'm not going to do that.
You're not going to do
I'm
it?
I'm between two other numbers. I'm not going where you're going. Wow.
I don't even know if you think you know where I'm going.
I know where I know. Where, I think I know where you're going, and it starts with a 5 and ends with a point and a 0.
Oh man, yeah, you're kind of on the head there. I have nothing against this movie though. It's good. Do I say it?
You
okay,
can say
fine,
it. I'm not
fine.
Say
you know what? I give this movie. I give it a solid 5.
Wow.
I think it deserves a 5. I think
the first
of all the
five
movies
out of
we've
five.
Seen,
Ladies and gentlemen, the first 5 out of 5 on Tickets for 2 podcast.
Yeah. That this movie definitely earns it. So, why are you against this movie that you will give it anything less than a 5? Why do you hate Jordan Peele so much?
There's a part of me that wanted to give this movie a 4 after rewatching it yesterday. Like a very strong 4. I just feel like I can't watch it ever. I don't know. Like I feel like 2 times is enough. First time you watch it through, you understand the story, you get the twist. Second time, you see all the metaphors and the callbacks and the foreshadowing. That's kind of all you need. Now, does a movie need to be rewatchable for it to be, you know, really good? I don't think so. Andrew, I give Get Out a 4.5 out of 5. I think that was my score out of the theater as well 5 years ago. I don't remember, but it's really, really good. But I got to save my 5.0 for something really special. Really special. It's gotta hit that magic touch, man. I can't give it too early.
So that's all that we have today. So thank you all very much for tuning in to our new episode of our Tickets for 2 podcast that we call Take 2, where we take a look back at some of our old favorites. So next week, we have our very special episode coming up that this week prepared us for. So Santi, what is that?
That's going to be Nope, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast. Andrew, directed by Jordan Peele. Is it going to be his first not so great reviewed movie? We'll find out, but we're definitely going to see it and review it. Excited for that one. I love Aliens.
I'm already calling it 60-ish% movie.
71%.
Okay, let's come back next week and see where we land. So thank you very much, everybody. We appreciate you, and we can't wait to see you on the next one.
We'll see you then.